14 years old, he was accused or found guilty in adult court of a crime that attempted first-degree murder and attempted armed robbery. Those are what we call non-homicide offenses. Nobody was killed. And in the Supreme Court case of Graham versus Florida, the holding was children, which he certainly was, are who are convicted of non-homicide crimes may not be sentenced to life without parole. It's a bright line, and so they have to have some meaningful opportunity to obtain release based on demonstrated maturity and rehabilitation. And what happened in his case is that he was sentenced not to life in prison without the possibility of parole, but he was sentenced to 70 years. And so the question before the Florida Supreme Court is a 70-year sentence effectively a life sentence? And so the Florida Supreme Court is going to have to grapple with that because it's not clear, both from the Supreme Court holding and in Florida law, whether a 70-year sentence is or is not a meaningful opportunity to demonstrate, you know, maturity and rehabilitation.
And as you mentioned, the 2010 High Court case, Graham versus Florida, it forbade life sentences without parole for juveniles and said that juvenile offenders must have a meaningful opportunity for rehabilitation. Why
to demonstrate that, right.
And so is the argument that Florida is skirting that ruling somehow when it comes to juveniles?
Well, yes. I mean, in other words, and that's not Florida so much as it's the court. In other words, the court in Gridiron basically said, look, I'm going to sentence this person to 70 years in prison. And the question is that a sentence of effectively a life without the possibility of parole, or is it a good sentence because at some point he may get out, albeit very little life left? And that's what the court has done. And so the question, and just to back up a little bit, Florida legislature, for a number of reasons, has not effectively dealt with the results of Graham versus Florida and the other case, which I'm sure we'll talk about, which is Miller versus Alabama. Those are two Supreme Court cases which require some legislation, and that has not happened yet in Florida.
And if you're just joining the program, this morning we're talking about a Jacksonville case that's sparking discussion about the potential reform of Florida's juvenile justice systems as the Florida Supreme Court looks at this. Let us know your thoughts. Do you think juvenile sentencing is too harsh in Florida, or do you disagree? We'll go to your calls in just a moment at 549-2937. And so, Steve, the 2010 decision, Graham versus Florida, was set a precedent. You also referenced another important 2012 decision coming out of the Supreme Court, Miller versus Alabama. That declared that juveniles convicted of murder cannot automatically be given life sentences. So this 14-year-old from Jacksonville, Shamik, he essentially has been given a life sentence, which would seem to fly in the face of the high court's ruling.
Well, that's right, and that's the issue that the Florida Supreme Court is going to have to address, and is currently addressing. There has already been arguments, and the Florida Supreme Court is going to have to sort out what a 70-year sentence means. There is a bill in the legislature right now pending, filed by Senator Bradley, who I believe represents part of the near Jacksonville.
Yeah, he's a senator out of Fleming Island, yeah.
Right, and he's from Orange Park. So his bill is somewhat controversial, but he, in terms of somebody who was sentenced under Graham, in other words, sentenced for a non-homicide offense, he gives them a minimum mandatory 25 years before a judge can consider whether this person has been rehabilitated. So that is some progress in terms of actually creating legislation which would address the issue of whether or not this person has become rehabilitated. And so, but they would still have to do 25 years in prison before they could do that. And the flip side of that is some people are arguing that, well, kids mature much earlier than that, and there should be some review process prior to 25 years. But that's sort of what's going on in the legislature right now.
Interesting. And, of course, we had a high-profile local case, a 12-year-old at the time, Christian Fernandez, charged with murder, the youngest murder defendant in Jacksonville history. He was initially charged via the state attorney's office as an adult. Eventually, some private defense attorneys successfully argued to have him transferred to the juvenile system. What was your reaction as you watched that case play out?
Well, several things. One is a 12-year-old is, I don't think, and very rarely is competent to stand trial, even in juvenile court. They just don't know all the consequences and all the players and all the issues. And that was never raised. The other thing is that he never should have been transferred to adult court. And I think the lawyers who handled that case negotiated with the prosecutors to keep him in juvenile court. But most, well, as important as that, apparently his mother was abusing him and his siblings. He was a very seriously abused child. And he, at the worst case scenario, killed his younger brother. But somebody who was that young and who was that terribly abused, I don't think should be in criminal court. I think it's a serious case, but it should be handled in the civil court, in other words, within the dependency system. I was, frankly, rather aghast that a 12-year-old, under his circumstances, would be prosecuted as an adult.
And we'll go to your calls in just a moment as we discuss whether the Florida Supreme Court might consider a major reform of Florida's juvenile justice laws. The number to join the show, 549-2937. A tweet from Jay: Florida's juvenile system is out of control, locking up more kids than anyone else, setting them on a criminal path. We need smart justice. Steve Harper, does Florida lock up more juveniles than any other state? Is that a fact? And can you talk a little bit about the concept of smart justice?
Well, I do know that there are currently 222 juveniles who have received mandatory life sentences under Miller. There are 43 who receive sentences for non-homicide offenses and 39 who receive life sentences for second-degree murder, which, you know, is sort of a lesser included of first-degree murder. I think Florida is one of the leading states in terms of children charged as adults. And whether or not the system is out of control is another issue, but Florida in general has taken one of the tougher stances when it comes to juvenile crime, when it comes to transferring kids into the adult system, and when it comes to the penalties for children. That's a policy decision. But I think, I don't know if it's out of control, but it certainly is one of the harsher states.
And what would you say to those who like that policy? They say if a teenager is firing a weapon and potentially killing someone, that they should face the same punishment as an adult.
Well, I think the Supreme Court of the United States has certainly taken up the issue in terms of kids are different. Kids who commit crimes, in the first case was Roper versus Simmons, which is that juveniles are not eligible for the death penalty. And out of that came Graham and Miller. And what the court is basically saying is that children are different. They are not as developed as adults. They are more impressionable. They are more rehabilitatable. And so culpability and blameworthiness is diminished to a substantial degree by reason of youth and immaturity. So kids are different. And I think, obviously, somewhat that the victim of a crime doesn't, in some instances, doesn't care how old the offender is. They're seriously victimized. And that's the flip side of this issue, is that people who are abused or people who are shot or people who are killed, then the victims or victims' families feel sometimes, not always, but sometimes feel anger and need for retribution. And that's sort of the other side of this story, is that victims and victims' families sometimes think that this person should be punished regardless of his age. And that's sort of the back and forth that's going on in this decision-making.
And if you're just joining the program, a local teen who was sentenced to 70 years without parole is now a plaintiff in a lawsuit before the Florida Supreme Court. It seeks major reforms to the state's juvenile justice system. What's your opinion? Let's go to your calls. 549-2937. Mark on the South Side's on the line. Hello, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning. I was just asked you and your guest to name one white kid that gets treated the same way that Christian Fernandez got treated in Florida. Thank you. Have a great morning.
That's Mark. What about the perception that Hispanic and black children are treated more harshly by the system, Stephen?
There's no question that the deeper you get into the system, in other words, if it's a misdemeanor crime all the way up to a first-degree murder crime, the deeper you get into the criminal system, the more black children and minority children you have. That is a problem that has always existed. And so I don't know if he had been white, he may not have been prosecuted as an adult, but certainly, I don't know the answer to that, but certainly black children and minority children are represented far more in the at the deep end than they are in any other than other less serious crimes. In other words, race is a factor in all cases.
549-2937. Cindy in Riverside is on the show. Hello, Cindy. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm very interested in this program, and this is a subject that's become much more dear to my heart since my own son got arrested for a fairly petty drug crime. And so it's really exposed me to the punitive and harsh sentencing that we have in Jacksonville, particularly for young people, but certainly for everyone. And it's obviously racially biased, but it also is, I think, one of the harshest and least forgiving or rehabilitative systems that we have in the country. And I think it's not doing us any favors for our social system and for rehabilitating these young people. And I understand that really adolescence continues into the mid-20s. So to have adult sentences for teenagers just seems to be harming us all in the long run.
Cindy, thanks.
I think you make a good point because, again, Florida, there was a huge crime wave in the early 90s, and the Florida law changed to deal with that because a lot of the crimes were being committed by kids. And so Florida got very harsh very quickly. And I think one of the unintended consequences of that was the adult system was simultaneously getting more punitive. And so kids got caught up in that situation where, A, the adult system was getting more punitive and more kids were getting sent into the adult system. So the Florida system is indeed very punitive. And I think that throughout the country, there is a shift back towards understanding that, A, kids are different, and, B, just punishing kids does not accomplish the idea of justice.
And we'll go back to your calls in just a moment. The number to join the show is 549-2937. Lots of feedback coming in online. Mike emails the show, "I don't know what the issue is. A sentence given is a very legal and technical thing. A life sentence and 70 years are two different things. There is no essentially the same when people live to 100. And a tweet from Concerned Citizen, "If you commit an adult crime, you deserve an adult punishment. I assume the kid didn't mean to use the shotgun to tickle his victim." What about that perception? What about that divide in terms of attitude on this issue, Stephen Harper?
Well, I think that says it very well. There are people that say kids are different, and they should be given the opportunity to show that they're not career criminals, that they are rehabilitatable. They're not as culpable. The flip side of that is just what this person said, adult crime, adult time. And so that is a dialogue that is continuing in the U.S. justice system. But what I would say about that is at least the Supreme Court of the United States, relying on evidence presented by the American Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association, and those are the groups that understand the many ways in which kids are different, the many ways in which kids are not mature, and the many ways in which kids are rehabilitatable. All of those groups say that kids are different and should be given the opportunity to prove that they are mature and rehabilitated. And so that's the issue, that the Supreme Court has relied to some effect on those agencies and been influenced by what the professionals have to say about this. And the Supreme Court certainly disagrees with that adult crime, adult time.
And if you're just joining the show, a Jacksonville case could spark reforms of the juvenile justice system in Florida. Jacksonville teen Shamik Gradine sentenced to 70 years without parole after an attempted robbery and shooting. He's pursuing a high school equivalency diploma in prison while he awaits a decision by the state's high court. Florida Supreme Court will decide whether Gradine's sentence violates the federal constitution, whether imposing a 14-year-old to 70 years in jail in prison is cruel and unusual punishment. What do you think? Let's go to Richard in downtown Jacksonville. Hello, Richard. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. You said perfectly what the point I wanted to begin with. For the first time, I think, in 50 years maybe, we are actually beginning to argue the disparities against blacks and Hispanics on a constitutional basis. every time someone is shot, the first thing that's argued is the right to bear arms, and we go into court with that. That's the Second Amendment. But during Reconstruction, the 13th, the 14th, and the 15th Amendment were written because of these very kinds of things. One earlier caller said, hey, it's the law. Well, it used to be the law to lynch black people. It used to be the law to make them put them in the back of the bus. And states kept claiming the right to have their individual laws. And the federal government had to finally write three constitutional amendments. And Amendment 13, 14, Amendment 15 actually was written because the southern states wanted to send the black babies back that were born here. And they finally had to write a constitutional amendment, say, if you're born here, you stay here. We haven't argued constitutional rights. And I think that this case may actually take it to where it needs to be. And then finally, I want to say this. Prison exists as a punishment for slavery, actually, because of the 13th Amendment. If you read the 13th Amendment, it says this, neither slavery or indentured servitude shall exist except as punishment for a crime. This kid is now sentenced to 70 years of slavery, and that's all it is.
Strong opinions from Richard on the South Side. Thank you, Richard. Now, Stephen Harper, any idea at all how the high court here in Florida might go with this case, what they might rule?
Oh, you know, it's tough to predict what courts are going to do. I have been right in some predictions and wrong in many more. But I think if they follow the spirit and the holding of the case, Graham versus Florida, and the key again is the states have to give defendants some meaningful opportunity to obtain release based on demonstrated maturity and rehabilitation. And if Grudine indeed can demonstrate maturity and rehabilitation, then I don't think 70 years is a meaningful opportunity. So if they follow the language of the U.S. Supreme Court and the spirit of the U.S. Supreme Court, I think they will find that 70 years is too much. But that said, I don't know if the court will find that, because the flip side of that argument is that, well, it's not a life without the possibility of parole sentence.
But is there any chance of Shamik Grudine, who's almost out of his teens now, ever being released from prison or having his sentence shortened or overturned?
Well, I don't know about what the legalities of the sentence are, but it clearly, one of the things that people sometimes skip over is that Graham does not require a person to be released. What it does do is it creates an opportunity for a juvenile to demonstrate that he's been rehabilitated and he's more mature. So I don't know the specific circumstances of Grudine. My understanding is that he has matured and he's much more responsible and he's much more, and he may well be rehabilitated if he has. The issue is, what is a meaningful opportunity? And I don't know how the court, and that would be another decision that the trial court should make. If the Supreme Court of Florida says, well, we think 25 or 50 years, he should have a review, then it's up to the trial court to make a decision as to whether he's actually demonstrated his maturity and rehabilitation.
Let's go to Steve on the South Side. Thanks for holding, Steve. Good morning to you. Steve, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering if anyone would care to comment on the Joshua Phillips case. He was a white kid that killed a white girl.
Right, Maddie Clifton. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole. And according to what I've heard, he got shoddy defense, yet he's still in prison.
Right, that was a high-profile case some years back in Jacksonville. Mr. Harper, I don't know if you're familiar with that one, but a lot of the same issues at play.
Well, right, but that was a homicide, and Miller says that children who have committed murder cannot be sentenced to a mandatory life without the possibility of parole. In other words, a judge still can sentence a juvenile, but he first has to have a full-blown sentencing hearing. That did not occur in the case that was just referred to. And the issue there is the Miller case retroactive? And that's a very technical legal issue. But in other words, does it only apply to people from here on in, from the date of the decision forward, or would it apply to somebody like him who was sentenced to a mandatory life without a possibility of parole? That various courts in various jurisdictions have come to different results. It's a very technical issue. I think it will go back up to the Supreme Court as to whether it is or is not retroactive. If it is found to be retroactive, he may, and I say may, be able to get some relief.
And potentially other young inmates as well, yeah?
Oh, yeah. No. They're about, 222 juvenile offenders who have received a mandatory life sentence. And if Miller is found to be retroactive, those 220 juvenile offenders will have an opportunity to go back to court and get a lesser sentence.
Let's go to Teresa in St. Johns County. Hello, Teresa. Thanks for calling in. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Melissa. I honestly feel, I feel strongly that children should not be sentenced as adults to begin with. I believe that the young brain, the teenage brain, is not yet developed enough to form the kinds of decisions, to make the kinds of decisions that result in these crimes. We're talking about younger people who are not developed enough. We see this every day in our high schools, children that are not developed enough to make these decisions. And we have communities where children are growing up in, surrounded by violence, and then they're put in these positions. I just don't believe the human brain is developed enough and that they shouldn't be held accountable as adults. When you put a gun in a child's hand, it doesn't turn that child into an adult. It's still a child. And then, of course, we're also talking here as when children are being sentenced as adults. And then we talk about the law, and you're talking about how this program says, well, if they show that they have matured enough and have shown some type of rehabilitation, then there can be some type of reconsideration. Well, if they were not mature, they're being sentenced as if they were mature, as adults. It doesn't make any sense.
Thanks, Teresa. Steve Harper, your final thoughts, and when might we see a ruling on this?
Well, it's been argued. It was argued several months ago. So I would predict that within the next 3 months, there should be a result in Grudine. There's also another case called Henry versus State where he was sentenced to 90 years, and both of those cases were heard in the Florida Supreme Court. So we will know at least, hopefully, what is and is not a life sentence. And whether or not a 70-year or 90-year sentence is, in fact, a life sentence or is constitutional. If they find that it's constitutional, then it's probably going to go up to the U.S. Supreme Court. I guess my final thought is that the Supreme Court of the United States basically recognizes that children are different, and left it up to state legislatures and courts to figure out exactly how that's all going to play out. And we're in the middle of this process playing out, and some of the results are going to be good, some of the results are going to be bad. Both sides of this story will get some results they like and some results they don't like, but ultimately the Supreme Court of the United States has said that kids are different, and we're going to see that play out in the legal system for some time to come.
Well, Stephen Harper, we thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.